Here's a place where all of us can be safe. Our stories of transformation can be safe, and all the things we want to research are safe here. This is Safe Space with Cheyenne. I'm really excited you're here, and I hope you stick around for a while, because I've got a lot to show you before I leave Earth. I love you guys.
Hello, my friends. Welcome back to your safe space. It's Cheyenne, and today I have Reese with me, who is an Indigenous medicine woman. But before we really dive into the work that she's doing now and the helping of releasing trauma with her clients, we are going to go through a very, very crazy, trying story. And I'm saying that lightly. Like, I don't even know if I could get my descriptive words right for what we're about to do. I know that Reese has published 2 books, so it really is a tell-all kind of story. We're not holding anything back. To say that it could possibly be a trigger warning episode, I think that is appropriate for the episode, but I do not want to deter anyone from hearing it. I will just let you know, we will be talking about some extremely dark topics, but the reason we're bringing these stories to light is because, one, it's healing. She's healed from it. She wants to help others heal from the same or similar situations, and that's what we're all here for in the safe space, right? To tell our truth, be safe with telling our truth, and then obviously after overcoming the lessons and realizing all of the things that we did, now we find a greater purpose in going out and helping humanity. That's the short of it. So welcome, Reese. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good. Like I said before we got started, super stoked we get to talk again and finally record all of this. I do remember snippets of our first conversation, and you had me on the edge of my seat. So now here we are again, a few months later after we got our schedules coordinated, and I'm about to be blown away from your story again, honestly.
You probably are.
So tell me about your work now, and then let's do like a flashback into this dark past that you have.
Okay. Well, today I use all of my training, both as a medicine woman and my background in high-risk social work, to really empower women to overcome trauma, exhaustion, and overwhelm, and really reclaim their lives.
Okay, tell me more about this medicine woman training. How did you get into Indigenous medicine training, for one?
Well, I'm lucky enough to be part Cree on my mom's side, and I was lucky enough in that to grow up, even though I was off reserve, I grew up in a community of Indigenous elders that were very eager to pass the culture forward.
Well, that's beautiful. What made you want to get into it? Was it a part of your personal healing? What was it, a way for you to release a lot of trauma? And then after you experienced it, you were like, I need to help people in this same format?
I would say at the youngest parts of that training, it was more that I was the kid that wanted to be a doctor and was happy to learn the natural holistic ways of healing through our culture and all of our practices. But then through my own journey, it was me looking for both mental and physical recovery that I couldn't find within Western medicine.
I just want to like breathe on that statement, because there's so many people looking to Indigenous medicine and holistic, whatever you would like to group it as now, because they've all been through the ringer of Western medicine. What do you think Western medicine is missing, where no matter what facet people are going to, they're still turning back to the holistic route?
Well, unfortunately, from what I can see, it is that Western medicine is only actually looking for a solution to someone's symptoms and not looking to fix the cause of someone's symptoms. If they just want to put a Band-Aid on it, so to speak.
Band-Aid on a broken leg?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that. I think when I think of what's missing in Western medicine is we're so focused on the physical body that we've all been taught that there's no other body that we have to focus on and take care of. And there's a lot of people that obviously have the belief that it's literally just the physical, you know, if we can't see it, it's not real. And they have these experiences in holistic medicine and, you know, energy healing and, again, all of these profound modalities that seem like pseudoscience at the time until they actually go experience it for themselves. And I think that's when a lot of the awakening has happened, is there's so much suffering in the world. And we've all gone to these facilities, these psychiatrists, these doctors, whatever you want to call it. And I'm not demonizing anybody in the practice. I'm just talking about what I have seen that has been missing. And it's been the spirit in the aspect of it. So I love that we're going to get into what you do for people. But before we break down more of your program and even getting into the books that you wrote and the possibility of bliss, take us back through this treacherous, viney, rose thorn filled past that you have overcome, honestly, like miraculously. Because I remember hearing your story for the first time and I was like, you're pretty normal for going through all of that, you know, not turning hard. I think it takes a pure heart, no matter what they go through, to just like stay true and like want to help people after they've went through everything, especially the things that you have. I think one of the things that I would like to say before we get started is, no matter if something has been done to you or you put yourself in a situation to receive a harm or like a bad road, there really is no judgment on that when I hear these stories. I am extremely inspired by people that take the long way home. And, you know, we're all like Pinocchio trying to get to school. And then they're like, come over here and drink beer and fuck school, man. And we're like, that is so enticing, right? I do not want to sit in class all day. I would love to go fuck around. And maybe there's some people that are like, no, I'm just going to go to school. And there's other people that, you know, the stove's hot and they want to know how hot it is. So your story is a really good representation of both of those, of like harm being done and then obviously not having an understanding of trauma, emotional regulation, how trauma affects the brain, responses, and just almost like being in a cyclical masochistic format, I think is the best way you can say, like, when you get that dark and you're around that, like, it becomes normal. It really is like a desensitizing format. So Your story really represents that to me. That's why I'm really happy you're on here and we're going to get into it, because there's so many people that have, whether they've wiped the slate clean and gone through it, they don't talk about it. They've completely casted that part of their identity away and made a new person. And if that's the route you want to go, that's totally fine. But you're helping people feel okay with their past, whether they chose it or whether it was chosen for them.
See, and that's the magic, because as dark as my past is, there's no shame. Every single one of those things made me who I am today. And honestly, made me a better service provider. Mm-hmm.
Is it easier for you to like see it in other people when they come to you as well? You know, because so many people feel so much shame over things, especially like sexual trauma that's happened to them. They feel so much shame as a victim for what happened to them. And then when they have to tell somebody that it happened, or they even realize that what they experienced was a traumatic sexual assault, that's one of the most mind-blowing things that I've ever seen, is you're like, oh, that wasn't right. That wasn't okay. That, like, it's a whole other level of sickness to get into. It's like, it's not like I was just a victim. I was like, I didn't even know how fucked up that was. And I'm still carrying that around with me because it's unhealed, because I don't know, because I don't understand. Like, the body keeps the score, right?
Yeah.
So Let's just get into it, because I feel like I'm just teasing like over and over and over. Like, go back as far as you would like and start us into this mind melding world that you were able to get out of.
Well, if you want to reel it right back to the beginning, my life from the age of 5 forward followed the narrative of a kid that was sexually assaulted, ended up in underage sex work, ended up in getting paralyzed and then addicted to alcohol for a few years, and then miraculously pulled myself out of it, finished all of my training, wrote a couple books, and have somehow lived to tell the story, even though that there, in that time period, there is countless abuse and countless other sexual assaults.
So going from being assaulted to then into the world of, like, basically underage sex trafficking, where's that jump? Like, is that a desensitization just from the trauma? Like, obviously there's drug use involved in that to, like, sway you in it, I would presume. Like, there's got to be.
Oh, not yet.
Not yet?
The drug use was not until later. It was desensitization paired with absent parents, mm-hmm. and the wrong crowd.
Yeah. Definitely. Now, were these older people that were influencing you into this? Like, it wasn't like a bunch of, like, 10-year-olds getting around at school being like,
no.
Hey, guys, we should go be middle school prostitutes. It was like older people taking advantage of you being young. And it's like the sickest form of Pinocchio, in my opinion, now that I've already used the Pinocchio reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long did you do that work?
I was in the industry for a 10-year span.
10 years. Let's pull this apart. 10 years. Okay. I have questions. And if I go too far, just say, you've gone too far, Cheyenne. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
10 years in the industry. Are you in houses, on corners, in clubs? Is this a network?
It was houses. I basically, because of the crowd that got me into it, I was basically escorting as a teenager. And then later on, once I was older, I reclaimed it and I switched more into the dominatrix world from 18 to 23.
Was that like you kind of taking your power back?
Ironically, yes.
Yeah.
And I say ironically because until I learned that people who appreciate or need pain for pleasure actually get the pleasure, I was just freaked out that I was causing people pain.
But it paid good money, so you kept doing it?
Well, it paid, and within the first few clients, I realized how much of a psychological healer that was for them. And that led into my own journey of discovering the healing possibilities of BDSM.
Okay, let's get into this. Healing possibilities in BDSM. And I do believe this is possible, but I would also just like to do a quick PSA for people who are like, what is BDSM? Or, oh my God, BDSM. It's demonic. Okay, so it stands for bondage, dominance, sadomasochism? Is that right?
More or less, yes.
Yeah, okay. Like, I feel it switches up. So basically, for anybody that's listening, it's like, what the fuck is that? It's usually the people with, like, the red rooms from, like, 50 Shades of Grey or the leather and the paddles. And there are different, like, characters and names, right? So you can be, like, you could be a dom, a sub, or a switch. I know there's other ones. There's, like, a brat and a daddy and a sir and a this and a that. Like, there's so many. like characters for scenes you can play. And in the correct community with consent and communication and understanding and aftercare, highlight, capitalize, capitalize, capitalize. There are people that like to healthily explore their sexual fantasies or desires or kinks in a mature fashion. Now, sadly, there's been a lot of stories in so many outlets that have really demonized what the originality of the community was about, which is why I'm doing this PSA before we get into what the fuck do you mean healing potentiality in BDSM, because for anybody that has never experienced it or is just like, that's fucking crazy, that's so stupid, keep an open mind here because we're getting into the psychology of people. And, you know, everybody has a kink, whether you would like to admit it or not, whether you would like to shove it down inside of you and be like, oh no, I just love missionary. You're lying, okay? Everybody has this thing. And there are people out there that will take the time to explore it. But I am fascinated with you explaining to us the healing potentiality in the BDSM community.
It's wonderful, honestly, and I don't say that lightly because, again, I myself, when I ventured into that side of sexuality, was fearful. And then I slowly found, especially those that have impact or pain kinks, they need it. And on the psychological effect, it's the psychosomatic. The releasing things physically from their body that they can't get out by sitting in a therapist's chair because they need the release of the knot, or they need to be brought to a consensual euphoria so that their brain just sees something in a different sense. But it's also, it's not just whips and chains. There is this forgotten, misconstrued side of BDSM that is the sensuality. You can tease someone until they're in complete euphoria with a feather boa. It doesn't have to be hitting each other.
Yeah, or drawing blood or anything crazy like that.
It's just erotic. Mm-hmm.
Up the sensual part of it too, because I think that gets misconstrued a lot. And I think the sensual part also comes with the responsibility and the communication, nurturing the connection. And again, like aftercare, especially if you are one of those people that do rougher scenes, you got to really up the ante on that aftercare afterwards, you know. And I'm not even getting into people that like love blood drawn, because I have not had the honor of talking to people like that, but fingers fucking crossed, right? But 10 years, you switch over, you take your power back. And when does this like awakening happen for you? Because you get paralyzed. Like, your story just keeps going and going and going. It's insane. Because, again, like, I'm putting myself in your shoes vicariously, and I'm like, I think I'd be tapped out at the sexual abuse. Like, I think I'd be tapped out at the trafficking. Yeah, maybe since I was already so far gone, I might as well go dominate a couple people and take my power back after it being, you know, robbed from me for so long. That would honestly, in that dysregulated nervous system, I would probably like think the same thing, right? So we're taking our power back. We're doing like, where from the BDSM scene to the paralyzation? Like, how do you become paralyzed?
Paralyzed was before BDSM.
Oh, okay. I'm messing up the timeline. So
that's okay.
Yeah. Tell me how this happened, because it was paralyzed, and then is that when the alcohol came in?
Yes, okay. Afterwards.
Okay.
Wow. I was paralyzed on an operating table to help reduce the frequency of epilepsy, which was actually misdiagnosed fibromyalgia. And from there, I was left side hemiplegic as if I had had a stroke at 16 years of age.
What were you thinking when you were just laying there? Like, were you just pretty sure that this was going to be the rest of your life? You're like, I'm done.
Yeah.
16, and like, this is it.
Well, I went from competing and regularly training martial artists that was living a good life, even with what everyone didn't know at the time. I was mortified overnight. Someone that was training for provincials and nationals to, if I'm a vegetable, I really hope I die.
Mm-hmm. I was about to ask about the suicide ideation, because that would obviously ramp up when you're in your own body and you're just staring around wondering what you're supposed to do. And you're so young, you know, like 16, right? And you're paralyzed. I would definitely feel the same way.
I did have a really comical, inappropriate reaction when they first told me, but that was because I was high on painkillers at 5 in the morning.
It's understandable. Painkillers make people do a lot of things. So then, did you go back home and be taken care of? Did the painkillers and the alcohol continue through all of this?
I was in a neuromuscular rehab facility for 7 weeks, and then I was sent home to continue recovery. And it was after I got sent home that I started drinking, like only a couple short months after being sent home. My childhood best friend was murdered. And that's where I really started to slip with the alcohol and was sneaking them. And then I was trading a lot of sex for alcohol at that point. And then I met my first personal partner that sexually assaulted me a whole bunch. And from there, the alcoholism, I hit a pitfall. It was, okay, this is addiction. And I had my grade 12 year to finish after that summer.
And you still finished school during all of this?
I still graduated on time, and I worked a full-time job that year.
Oh my gosh.
On top of everything else.
I'm just like, my head is so dizzy with the story already.
I was a kid that luckily, from the trauma, I was only sleeping about an hour a night because I was so afraid to sleep from the trauma nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
That whenever I did fall asleep, I only got about an hour for about 3 years, which helped me be really,
really like bad dreams. Like if you would go to sleep, it would just like literally be a horror scene.
I could write some Stephen King novels off of those.
No, I would not read them.
No, you would not.
I can barely do ghost stories. I started seeing dead people 4 years ago, and I have worked so hard to just ground that back into reality where I think it belongs in my life right now. I'm really not interested in seeing things standing behind people while I'm out in public with my husband and my child.
Right? Like, it's super, super uncomfortable every time it happens.
I do think that there are people who, you know, with whatever awakening that they come into, it's, I mean, highly proven that clairsenses are activated in those. And I really do think it's up to you to really, like, step into that. And if that's something that you want to do and dedicate your life to, in any form of spirituality, I think it's admirable and honorable in a sense because of the energies that you're opening yourself up to and the amount of trust that you have to have in the visions that you're having. And I've done the work. I love the work. I found out through the work that I don't want it to be my identity and like my full life. Like I see when it happens with people. I am an extremely multifaceted creator. I really enjoy taking the things that I see and hear and feel and just experience and create with it, whether it's in the artwork that I do or the writing that I do. And even like you, like I can think of experiences that I've been through in the training that I'm doing behind the scenes to really step up to the plate one day and start helping people in a clientele capacity. But I also am so fascinated with just studying and documenting my own journey and like doing it from that platform that, yeah, I don't want my whole life to be randomly seeing dead people and them walking up to me because, yeah, it's just not a full-time gig for me. I really like being a normal human being. And I think I found that in the last 4 years of going through all the things that I did. And I'm winding up to feeling like maybe that's something that you have also found with being the Indigenous medicine woman that you are, is there is a supreme balance that you would like to have in living in the physical world and also honoring your spiritual side.
Very much so.
Well, talk to me about that. Like, pull that apart for me in your perspective.
I mean, trauma aside, I was always awake. As far back as my memories go, I was talking to dead things that weren't there.
They're just on a different frequency. That's how I like to like sciencey tell myself, you know, because it's like they're not there. I'm like, but they are because their energy. It's just out of the visual light spectrum. Google it, please, listeners, if you don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's mostly animals.
See, and I think that's cute because I love the whole spirit animal thing. I have a friend that reads spirit animals, and they're all very compatible at the time. Did you like see them around you and around people and in dreams?
Yeah, and especially like that there were a few that we assumed died where my house was built.
That makes sense.
They were just always there. It was, okay, this is odd. And there were, of course, years where I shut off like the spiritual side of me because I just couldn't handle it. And alcoholism. Mm-hmm. But reclaiming all of it, like now, I don't advertise that, you know, yes, I'm a very spiritually connected person and I see things. But when a person needs it, I will bring it up.
Mm-hmm. You're like, just so you know, I see a white Bengal tiger next to you. You're welcome.
Right? Yeah, or it's, hey, can we talk about something I just saw that you might have forgot happened?
Yeah, that came up a lot in my readings. In my readings, I had like a 50% cry rate in the shows that I would do. And I really am proud of the work that I did with all the people that I worked with at Space. Because nobody had ever talked to them or seen the things that I saw when I was with them in that room. And everybody walked in that room, and it's usually like the usual like tarot oracle questions. Like mm-hmm. It'll either be mm-hmm. love, career, or a windfall of money, right? Like the three things that'll make all of the human suffering go away. And I would always start with, have you ever had a reading from me before? And have you ever had a reading in general? Because this is kind of just going to be like a conversation with a friend. And we're going to bounce energies off of each other. I'm going to use the cards as like a buffer. Because as soon as you start talking, I will start seeing images in my head. And I will start hearing someone talk in my ear about you. And I'm like, if you'd like to know who it is, we'll figure that out, but most likely it's your higher self talking to me. And they would basically, again, love, money, or career, whatever, how am I supposed to go this way? And I would say, we need to talk about the thing that you're not dealing with or you're shoving down, because that really is a blockage in you. And then I would see a pretty horrific scene in my head, and I would see parts of their body light up in more of like a chakra system format is what I would say, or injuries on their body that would highlight. I would connect that with my studies to meridian lines in your body to check out the emotional code. And then I would just ask, like, I never wanted anyone to come to me like I had all of these answers and this hidden knowledge that you had to come to me for. I was just like, you were put in front of me today. I was put in the space. If you would like to talk, I believe everybody's paths cross for a reason. And while I was doing that work, like I said, I had a high cry rate, but the darkness that I have seen in others that is just hanging out in them and they don't realize, I honestly thought it was a service, and still do to this day, think it was a service like for God to just be like, hey, they got a blind spot and they came to you. You are completely allowed to deliver that information. And if they don't want to, it's up to their free will to kind of push it aside. But when you're sitting in front of a stranger that's never met you and they're telling you about something that happened to you when you're between the ages of like 5 and 7 years old, and you've never told anybody that story in your life, like, what scientific reasoning can you go Google after you meet me of how I would even be able to come up with that? I mean, literally, you would probably start looking into anything in the physics department to make you understand the collective energy perspective. Because a lot of the people that I was doing was really new into their awakening too. And I have such a soft spot for people that are waking up however they wake up, right? Like, it's not always so spiritual with crystals and meditation and clair senses. And, you know, sometimes I've met people with extremely grounded awakenings, and as honestly, as jealous as I am for them, I'm also just so curious of the way that people have an awakening, whether it's an awakening to not drink anymore, not do drugs, not eat bad food, not work out, this shift that they have where they want to be a better version of themselves and they have to take these steps to do it.
Right. Like, that's the beauty. I mean, even with like my therapy clients, I will use my intuition when we're not seeing progress and I know that there's something they're not telling me. They're like, come on, I can see it. And I will just inch them towards it until they give me that, oh yeah, this. But that's a way I can use it without being like, hey, I'm a psychic medium, love me forever.
Yeah, I think it's just like modern intuitiveness. Like, there's so many people that just use intuition on a day-to-day basis for everyday life. And the way I like to generalize it and normalize it, just so everybody's not walking around thinking they're a psychic medium, or, you know, we're all supposed to live these like high vibe spiritual lives like that, is it's the same voice in your head that tells you when you're walking out the front door that your keys are on the counter. But it's such a small voice in that time. It's the Gemini in your mind. That's what I call it too. Because you haven't nurtured the intuition. You have outsourced every part of yourself to society, indoctrination, people's opinions. The loved ones is the one that comes to mind mostly for me, because it's like, oh, they love me. They have the best intentions for me. So obviously they know better than me, you know, and maybe that is right in some cases and wrong in other cases, however you want to, you know, decide. It still blows me away that when you actually start going within, in whatever modality you choose to go in, and dig into the thick of the unlovable parts of yourself, you find so much in there that you have been avoiding and neglecting. And you find that small little voice that was reminding you about the keys. And it's like, I'm you. I've been here helping you all the time. You only let me help with logical stuff, though. you know, I'm not able to help you with anything else because you don't have a belief in this. You know, it just seems, it seems like a lot of people are cut off from the right hemisphere of their brain. Mm-hmm. That's what mm-hmm. I found in a lot of the studies that I continuously do is, you know, the right brain is so creative and so feminine and so free flowing. And I really do think that we grow up in a society that teaches us to be so left brain. It's also been called the reptilian brain, but it's also the masculine part of your brain hemispheres, that any of the beauty or mysticism or miracle, whatever you'd like to call it, immediately gets kicked out or even called demonic. And I just find that so weird, considering that shamanism is like the oldest form of any type of connection to the highest creator of all of us.
Yeah. And exactly. Because if like holistics and mystics or shamans have always been like the originals. And yet people will tell you to believe in Western medicine that's been around for a couple hundred of years.
The thing I find fascinating about Western medicine, and when I specifically say Western, I mean when we transition from natural holistic medicine to like a synthetic petroleum-based medicine, I think it was Rockefeller or Rothschild, probably the same thing. So they basically like started the whole synthetic industry, right? They took everything in medicine, mashed it down into, you know, a higher formed pill. And yes, I am obviously super excited about amoxicillin, right? We all grew up with that bubblegum shit and couldn't live without it. So I'm not demonizing Western medicine when I'm saying this. I'm just giving an alternative perspective because I do believe in a blending of the medicines since they're here. But here's the problem that I have with it. So we go to a petroleum base instead of what God gave us, right? Cancers and all of these crazy diseases start popping up, but cancer was one that started popping up as almost like a byproduct of the petroleum base and all of the medicines. So picture people coming to the corporation that made the synthetics and they were like, hey, people are starting to get cancer now because, you know, we're literally not using like natural ingredients. And they're like, what shall we do? We should start the American Cancer Society and we should make propaganda where we basically make these people like heroes for going through this disease that we know that we technically created through this false medicine compared to natural and holistic plants outside. That's all I'm saying. And then on top of that, let's make sure during this transition and for the rest of eternity that we use propaganda to sway the narrative that holistic medicine is bad, it's demonic, it's not good for you, it takes too long, it doesn't work. This is a scientifically proven method for this disease to cure this disease. Which, yes, you're right, it is more fast acting in a way, but like, okay, if I get a headache and I want to take ibuprofen and I want to take like a handful of ibuprofen, what does that actually do inside of my body afterwards? Because yes, you're correct, my headache goes away, but what are the side effects? And if I continuously have migraines and I take that medicine, what other parts of my body are breaking down? Because what we're finding is when, and one of my friends is a master herbalist, so she's just a front runner in this business. But all of the things that she recommends, not only are you healing those things of your body, you're getting to the root of the issue in your body, and you're not destroying your body trying to heal it. And I see in a lot of things, especially in cancer research, whether you'd like to believe it or not, there are plenty of cures for cancer. And I'm not just talking about like one medicine is the do-all. But I had a family member way back in the day that Western medicine was like, you have this type of cancer and you have a couple months to live. And she was like, fuck this. And she left the country and went to, I'm assuming, a holistic medicine place over in Germany. And she juiced so many carrots that her skin was like turning orange. And they, you know, they put her on, you know, God's medicine. And she lived far past what the doctors ever said. The cancer went away Because I think, as we've seen through a lot of scientific research now, like sugar is literally like food for cancer cells and tumors and all of these things in our bodies. And if anybody's listening to this right now and going, holy shit, I never knew any of this. Me either, until I started doing my research, because my body wasn't acting properly with the foods that I was eating and even the labels that I was reading that I thought were okay for me. Like, bioengineered this and modified this and ingredients that I can't even freaking pronounce. You know, we've gotten so far away from it. And I'm really curious, in your perspective, like, where do we go from here as far as helping our bodies with what is being shoved in our face? Like, even if you bought something organic, you're still going to have a chemical on it now. So from your perspective, to try to stay as holistic as possible, like, what would be some things that you would suggest to people to help clear their systems out?
Honestly, try and grow your own vegetables if you have the space and the capacity. But other than that, like, really try and get away from the refined sugars. Because the more natural the food you're consuming, the less processed, the less secret chemicals are in there that aren't on a label. And, like, the less you have to worry about the North American food scheme.
You know, I love that you say that, because there is a word called fragrance on the back of so many products, whether it's, you know, cleaning, perfumes, name it, right? And I saw this documentary one time, and I can't remember the exact amount of chemicals that they're able to hide in the word fragrance, but it was either like 1,500 or 15,000. And I feel like it might be around 1,500. I don't know. Maybe I should link the documentary below. But when I found out that not only when you read a label, it's not actually everything that's in there, but we had a government that thought that it was appropriate to allow people to hide ingredients so we don't know what we're buying. And then they want us to trust them. That is what I find so mind-numbing. Like, I consider every, like, relationship with government in one of those higher institutions, like, if I was in, like, a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship with them. And I'm like, this is so toxic. This is so abusive. This is gaslighting. To, I don't even know if I'll ever know what reality really is at this point, because I find out the truth, I find out you're lying, and you tell me your lies are okay, it's not that bad, it's okay to drink the water in Michigan, you know, all these fucked up scenarios that I keep hearing. I went to Flint, Michigan one time, I was terrified to drink the water, might I add. But I know I got a little off course on this, but this shit is like, I'm honestly a little passionate about having a discussion about it, because I know in any form of awakening that people have, they kind of look around and go, oh, that's fucked up. Oh, that's in the food. Oh, that's in the water. Oh, well, no wonder my body's not acting right. I literally have been putting synthetic chemicals in it for decades. Like, that would actually make sense that I'm sick. And honestly, like, I think the information takes shame away from people. That will obviously raise your vibration, is what I would say.
Well, and believe me, I'm not encouraging everyone to go out there and smoke cannabis or consume edibles or oil or any of that. But the biggest one in my nerve regeneration and neuro connectivity between my muscles throughout the most intense parts of my paralysis recovery was actually pot edibles. That they were still illegal when I started.
True. I and have to think was, like, how new the movement still is.
But that was the game changer for me. It reduced my pain to a manageable level, and from there the nerve regeneration and muscular connectivity was intensified immensely. And that, like, was the original shift. And even those in my family that were like, oh, that's terrible. You're gonna be addicted. All of those different qualms didn't notice how I was seeing a daily difference in movement, strength, you know, energy levels, etc.
Did you think that they didn't see it because it was obviously outside of their belief system? Like if they yes. saw that you were recovering, then they would have to change their mind about the fact that it's not some weird gateway mind altering drug that, you know, we banned to get the hippies out of here.
Exactly. They didn't see it because they didn't want to. And now, almost a decade after my original paralysis, my grandmother, when I have a fibro flare, will ask me if I have any gummies on hand.
Don't you love that? I love when the older generations are really just getting in on it.
You finally grew as a person, you know?
Good for her. Really, good for her. Okay, so I know we got sidetracked off this story, so I definitely want to get back on track where we were. Okay, let's see. We had the paralysis, the alcohol. When did this shift happen, this awakening to start healing all of this trauma that you went through?
Honestly, I was already trying to start the healing before I wrote the first book when I was 19. But I wasn't actually able to stop drinking and get sober until shortly after that first book came out when I was 20. And from there, when you remove your masking substance, all walls are off. You are now just bombarded with everything that you've been pushing down. And from there, I really had to shift into finding holistic mental health practices, specifically for PTSD.
What were those like? Especially getting into them, because I always like to be extremely transparent when I get into new things, especially when I started getting into anything holistic or outside of the country that I was raised in. I felt cheesy doing it because I was never taught to feel into my breath and feel into my body. So really mm-hmm. taking the time to slow down and just like touch my head or my shoulders or breathe and to focus on my breath. Like when I first started those practices, I was like, this isn't fucking doing anything. Right. Which is counteractive when you think about how thoughts are extremely powerful. But again, getting into a new practice, like how did you, before seeing the results, because you have to do it, you know, it's kind of like 21 times to form a habit. How did you really center yourself to go, okay, these practices are good for me. They're going to help, obviously, with continued practice.
Right. I was kind of fortunate in that I had been meditating on and off most of my life. But I found a teacher who was doing an online psychedelic meditation without the drugs. And solely with just a breathing technique. And I, at this point, already had done enough research on psychedelics to know how good they were for the brain, but would rather lean into the breath work to get there instead of substance. And the first one I ever did with her, I bawled hysterically for probably 3 hours after I was in the emotional state. But then from each time that I did it after that, it was just immense and human. And trauma is not something that will ever 100% go away. But I'd say at this stage in my life, I'm at a point where it maybe affects 5 days out of my year.
Well, you're still so young too. So I think if you continue on the path that you are of healing, of expanding, of growing, and the more you distance you put between that, right? I mean, yes, I can definitely see how you saying, oh, it can never go away. I just think time and effort and growth and persistence and keeping that vision. I mean, talk to your like self 10 years from now or 20 years from now, and just even think about the woman that you're going to be. And it'll just be like that. It's a movie. You know, I don't feel connected to it like it's a part of me. Because that's what I found out about a lot of the introspective work that I did, was that's such a lower octave of myself. Like, I've retained my personality. I've retained my wittiness. I can still insult you like a sailor. You know, I do not want to, but I have the capability. But all those octaves of myself, like, I've really put to rest, and I've nurtured her the way that I believe that she deserved to be nurtured at the time. I was too busy outsourcing that to other people and believing, because I didn't get that from them, that one, there was something inherently wrong with me. Abandonment issues, childhood wounds. I think everybody has all of these, honestly. This constant loneliness that doesn't go away in a weird sense, which ultimately I just realized I just want to go home. I don't have like ideation every day where I'm like, oh God, I just like rather kill myself instead of living my life. I'm just like, I understand where the ideation comes from. I have, like you, you've identified a lot of the root issues and a lot of the things you've done, and not recognizing that part of yourself as who you are today, but recognizing it as a part of the path, is one of the most transformative things I've had in my own healing journey. But it's also the main thing, the main thread that I hear running through a lot of people that have come from extremely dark places to even the gray area of, oh, I was acting in a way I knew wasn't me.
Right. Well, and honestly, even today, I'm not that person. Mm-hmm. I am 99.9% better.
So what coping mechanisms, I hate to say coping mechanisms, but for lack of a better term, that's just what I'm going to use, so I don't have to dig around my mind for it. Like, you started with this meditation. It led you into a path of being a medicine woman.
Right. Well, and the medicine training like started when I was young, and luckily they did it when I had free time throughout most of my youth. Mm-hmm. And the only time I wasn't super connected to that training was the years of active addiction. Mm-hmm. And then I went back to them and I pled my case, so to speak. I'm like, can we finish this? I need to come back to this. This is the path. I got out of the way for a while. Mm-hmm. And all of them were just like, yeah.
I honestly think it's a form of protection when you step away from that stuff when you're unhealthy. You know, I don't think infiltration gets talked about enough in any form of spiritual anything, whether it's shamanism all the way to channeling and psychics and energy work, like whatever you want to talk about. Like, when you're not doing good and taking care of yourself, the last thing you need to be doing is going and quote unquote helping other people, because your vibration is not really at a sustainable, appropriate level. And it's easy to be infiltrated, so easy. Like, my camera's going crazy right now because I'm talking about this. And I don't think it gets talked about enough, that you really got to check yourself before you do that. So I think it's almost a form of protection with the way that you started when you were young. Obviously, you had your shadow time. And then when you realized, like, oh, this is here, what wonderful understanding people to go, yes, like, you know, maybe that's your rite of passage. I'm not going to judge, but when you see the path clearly ahead of you, you're the only one that can actually take it. So tell me about your work today and how you are assisting people with the things that you've done, and also, you know, moving forward in your own recovery, how you plan to add that to all of the things that you're helping your clients with.
Honestly, it has tied into being insanely passionate about taking a holistic approach to mental wellness and looking at every area of our life, like including your own sex life, whether that's just by yourself or not, to the food that you eat or the teas that you're drinking. And if you're experiencing any certain set of symptomology, I'm going to ask you about your diet, because I don't doubt that there are foods in there that will be causing what are classified as your mental health symptoms. But I have a lot going on, from a no-cost women's group that holds a weekly virtual discussion where it is participant-led, so whatever topics that the ladies want to discuss, we will roundtable them and get each other's both opinions and, I guess, thoughts on how a person could overcome that, placing each participant in the group as their own expert of their own recovery. But I also have the possibility of this audio series, which features links to two super inspiring TED Talks if you're having a really rough day, and an audio love letter from me, just to remind you that you're important, you're loved, and no matter what you're going through, it's going to get better.
There are dark times, but they're just going to get you through. My mom would always tell me when I was younger. Actually, she still tells me this to this day, but she would say, the mountain can't get any bigger, you can. I'm like, thanks, Mom. It's going to be okay.
Right?
It's going to be fine. So if you had like one like message or encouragement that you could leave people with at the end of the episode, what would you want to tell everybody?
Honestly, I would say follow your heart and do truly what is best for you each and every day to the best of your ability.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Before we get off here, you do have a website that I have linked down below. Is there any other way that people can reach you to get a hold of you for your services?
They can find me on social media under my name, Reese Sabatini Blake, and I do respond everywhere. But website is probably easiest with all the links that are up there.
Perfect. Well, my friends, you know that that's all linked below. And if you would like to hear any more of Reese's story or get a hold of her for all of your Indigenous medicine woman healings, feel free to hop on over to all of her socials and click follow, like, subscribe, love, whatever you'd like to do. I really appreciate you coming on today and telling this story. I'm sure it gets easier and easier the more empowered you get, but I also still know it still kind of like shakes you up when you have to talk about those past parts of yourself. So I just really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think this is how people heal. This is how I heal. So, mm-hmm. You know, I hope that if anybody finds any sort of solitude in your story, that they really reach out to you and just, you know, have a little me too moment. I think that helps people not feel so alone. And again, no matter if it happened to you or you chose, you know, that dark path for a while, there's always a way out. The light's always going to win, at least in my opinion. And I love the people that go through it and come out stronger and want to go help other people through it too. I just think that that shows the beauty in the human connection.
Exactly. Like the more we band together, the better we'll be.
I like it. It kind of sounds like a Beatles song, just so you know. It's not actually a Beatles song, but that's kind of where I feel like you're going this. So all you need is love. And before we get out of here, Neovi is going to bring you a track called bad for you. Surprisingly, that's the intuitive choice that I had today for the music. So you can find this track linked below as well. And you can also find it on the Safe Space playlist. Head over to my TikTok, check out my link tree, and you'll be able to download the playlist. Reese, thank you again. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you on the next episode, my friends. Oh my, someone love you this much, yeah.